Good morning. I'd like to call the February 10th, 2010 City of Daytona Beach Code Enforcement Meeting to order, please. Madam Secretary, would you call the roll?
Mr. Brown?
Here.
Mrs. Heinrich is absent. Mr. Borns is absent. Mr. Smart?
Here.
Mr. Harrington?
Here.
And we have a new member, Ms.
Kundig.
Kundig.
Here.
And Mr. Stevens,
here.
We also have Mr. Kramer here today filling in for Mr. Sino.
With all members of city staff who are going to be testifying, please come forward and be sworn.
You solemnly swear to the testimony you about provided, that you can tell the truth and nothing but the truth?
I did. If all members of the board have the opportunity to review the January 13, 2011 meeting minutes?
Yes.
Yes.
Are there any changes or amendments, corrections that need to be made? Chair would entertain a motion to approve.
I so move.
So move.
I have a motion by Mr. Smart, second by Mr. Brown. Are there any questions or comments by members of the board? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed, same sign. Is there any member of the board who would like to disclose any ex parte communications?
So they can't hear us.
Barbara. We have some members of the audience who say they can't hear us. Hear me, I guess. My mic is on. I'd like to note the arrival of Mr. Bowens.
You can't hear.
Is there any member of the board who would like to disclose any ex parte communications? I would like to move to excuse Mrs. Himes' absence. She did call and say she wasn't feeling well this morning. Anyone who would like to make that motion?
So moved.
Second. By Mr. Brown, second by Mr. Smart. Are there any questions, comments by members of the board? And then all in favor say aye.
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 All the same sign. And any members of council present? Mr. Robinson, we'll take you in just a moment if you don't mind. Would you like to do that? Tony? Is that okay?
Yeah.
Is that leaking roof part of code enforcement?
Are there any members of council who
is that a leaking roof?
No.
Representing any respondents today? Mr. Robinson, would you like to come forward?
I think they're cleaning up the
mess. Teamwork.
Yeah.
Case is CEB 11102076 Tanglewood Street, Martin Ebersbach. That's lien review number two.
Dave Robinson from Mr. Ebersbach, who sits in the rear of the room. Sir, since the imposition of the fine, Mr. Ebersbach has decided to sell the property. He's had a sign out in front of it since a day or two after the fine was imposed. He's got a prospective purchaser, David Ebersol, who sits beside him in the courtroom. He's a retired firefighter from Jacksonville who owns several rental properties in Daytona Beach. He's interested in purchasing the property and using it for a rental. The contract, I believe, was attached to the petition to review this, and is contingent upon some mitigation of the $20,000 fine. The property's on the tax rolls for about $75,000. There's an existing $134,000 mortgage on the property to the prior owners, Dayton and Bell Payton. The violation which led to the imposition is not one that is irreversible. It would qualify for mitigation under those circumstances, and we would ask the panel to mitigate the penalty substantially, probably as much as 90%. So that the what we're asking for is a penalty of $2,000, which would be $500 per day for the 4 days of Oktoberfest last year, when it was determined that it was in violation of the previous will fine order.
I'll hear from city staff.
Hey, if I can start, I don't know if you have a copy of the contract for sale of purchase.
Yes.
If I'm understanding the contract for sale of purchase, it appears, I mean, Mr. Robinson, if you can correct me if I'm getting it wrong, it appears that this is passing a mortgage from one name to the other. So just an assumption.
It'd be an assumption.
No real transaction. I mean, other than an assumption changing the name. And so, with that understanding, I have a little bit of a problem, and just from looking into this, we also would note that it appears that an anticipated closing date of 5/30/2011. City starts to this. One, first of all, just a little clarification, and I think you already realized this, that a lien review was a discretionary act. We all, it's up to you guys, and it's not, there's no compulsion under law for you to give any reduction at all. So that's something that you get to choose to decide on your own. And your basis for decision doesn't fall into those criteria in the statute. It falls into just, you know, you guys sitting there hearing it out and thinking about what you want to do. Among the problems we have is this. We have a closing date of 5/30/2011, which we think is good. Should be a closing date probably then, and that's in May. And because the closing date is not incoming, we think that a lien reduction right now would be premature. And the reason why we think it would be premature is because we had a situation where these guys were cited as a result of this board making a determination that they violated an order to comply. We recognize that those violations were related to special event periods that we had specifically by periods as a Viking, as we represented and we truly believe as an ownership of a Viking organization. We have Viking events that will be coming up as part of the special events. We think that it will be a better gauge of reasonableness on whether you mitigate this the current liens based upon how things the results of what occur through this Viking event. If indeed this property is not being used, if indeed it's not going to be used as a in a manner that's not consistent with residential living, or if it's going to be used in a manner consistent with residential living and had nothing to do with the concerns that were addressed by this board before, then it may be reasonable for you to consider reduction. But at this point, we believe that you don't have that information before you, and it's not and it's premature now to make mitigation. In addition to that. And again, I welcome Mr. Robinson to correct me if I'm wrong, but our best information is that the potential buyer is the father of a known outlaw. So if that is indeed the situation, we represent and believe that the ownership of this structure is not necessarily related specifically to an individual, it's to an organization. And so what we really would have is the move of the name on title from one person in the organization to someone closely related in the organization. And so from that, in that regard, we don't believe that it would really be a disinterested party transfer, and really that we're in any situation different than the one that you sit in before and that you were sitting in prior to this request. And so for both of those reasons, we recommend that there be no reduction, especially at this time, and we are not against the board considering it closer to a date closer to closing or a date after the special events, but we would be against any reduction at this time.
Jackson, I agree with Mr. Jackson.
A continuance?
I'd stipulate to a continuance, and I agree with Mr. Jackson that it would probably be a good gauge of our sincerity if we passed this beyond March. I put the May closing date in case it took longer than anticipated. We could probably close it next week, but I do think it would be a good gauge of our sincerity if we waited till after this upcoming bike event, and you could see for yourself the fact that Mr. Ebersole's son is a Outlaw Motorcycle Club member. The market is very weak right now, if you're not aware of that. And Mr. Ebersbach put the sign out there soon after the fine was imposed. He got one bite by Mr. Ebersole, who owns other rental properties, and said, I'd be interested in the thing if we get the lien off it and we could perhaps renegotiate the terms of the mortgage. And that's our plan. And I think it would be appropriate to redocket this for after March, what is it, the 11th is the last day of bike week, or later in March, or maybe early April.
The next meeting date is April 14th.
I'd stipulate to retabling it at that time if that's what you'd like to do.
I have one question. Mr. Ebersack, didn't you say you lived in Orlando?
Yes.
You have to be sworn in, Mr. Ebersack.
He raised his right hand before.
Okay, it says Jacksonville on this.
I don't think he was up here when we were right hand. So just to clear the record's real clear.
And I apologize.
That's the button. No, it isn't.
You tell me, Judge, that you're not about to provide the truth and all truth and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Mr. Ebersole, the purchaser, is the gentleman sitting there, and he is from Jacksonville.
Well, the document, I guess. he is the seller.
Ebersole,
what's his address is Mr. Ebersole's, I see, from Jacksonville. Okay, got it clear now.
Chief Deputy Beard, do you want to say anything? You want to contribute to the conversation?
No, sir. I think it's a, like Mr. Robinson said and Mr. Jackson said, it'll be a good gauge to find out if those activities still take place. I'm hoping that they're good on their word with this and we don't have any issues. So we'll give them the benefit of the doubt.
What's your opinion in terms of Mr. Robinson's request for a reduction?
I would have to wait until after the bike week event, because as we've heard in prior testimony, bike week is a huge event. Bike week is a huge event for the Outlaws. I'm just a little concerned that the friends from Jacksonville will come down for this event. And like I said, I hope it doesn't happen, or I'm going to take your word for it.
Okay. We got a lot at stake here, too, to assure that it does not happen.
Are you available then, Mr. Robinson, on April 14th? Mr. Jackson probably will be here.
I certainly will be.
Chief Beards?
Yeah.
And the chair would entertain a motion amending our previous order and... No, just continuing the case until the lien review until meeting date on April 14, 2011.
So moved.
Second.
Mr. Brown has the motion. Mr. Smart was second. Are there any questions or comments by members of the board? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign.
Can I make one comment? I think the city did a great job in how they took a look at this. But what bothered me about the contract was the $500, which you know someone could easily walk away from, and also the fact that the only special clauses in here had to do with the lien that we have. Here's a house that was built in 1965. You don't have an inspection?
That's optional, Mr. Smart. Well, to the buyer.
I'm just very surprised that that happened.
Whereas he's going to assume the mortgage and take it as is, whereas that if it was a purchase where he was paying it all off or financing it through a bank, obviously there'd be inspections. But it's the previous owner is financing it and agreed to do so. So that's the reason.
Still the option of the buyer, Mr. Robinson, as you probably know.
Yes, sir.
Well, they're not bound by that. It's an option that the buyer seeks.
There's not a lot of buyers out there, sir, this time.
I'm not saying that. I'm just responding to Mr. Smart's comment and saying that an inspection is warranted by the buyer. It's their choice.
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
We
see you in
the case until April 14, 2011.
Thank you.
Now for our lien review number one, the case is CEB 11101985 552 Bellevue. Robert Clark has responded here. Clark, could you raise your right hand if you swear?
You tell me the president's testimony you're about to provide, which you're told you have a question. Can you state your name, please, for the record?
Robert Clark.
And what can you tell us about it?
Well, you can recall the time when you were the last. You had asked for extra time, I believe you wanted 60 days. 60 days was too much. I thought you could move the vehicle within 30 days. You had asked for. It was 90 days, and then we went with the 60 days.
Correct.
Before we decided that after the 60 days, it still wasn't done. I did several re-inspections and found that in all the re-inspections, he was not in compliance. A couple times wasn't at the property. I was doing my own inspections, which are about my time as well. And we then came to a conclusion where, an agreement where he was finally moved, and he is now in compliance. I'm asking that we cut in half 50%, which we bring it down to 325.
Mr. Clark, do you have anything you'd like to share with us?
No, that's good. I agree with Mr. Garcia.
Your violation was a junk vehicle. Can you tell us why you didn't actually move it, even after we allow you extra time?
Well, I tell you what, at the end of my driveway, I have some asphalt here that's a dive, like a dip. But it's long enough for an automobile to see. But from the street, you can't see it. You know what I mean? Yeah. You can see the automobile, but it seems like it might be sitting on dirt, but it's sitting on asphalt. And it's about the length. That's what happened. Well, maybe one of the tires is a little down on it. He can see it kind of clear, you know.
It's in two of the pictures there, and I explained that was an extension of the driveway, and it was beyond the fence line.
It's
in the backyard.
It's beyond the fence line, you're right.
Danny, will $325 cover the cost of the city, this particular action?
Yes, sir.
So we'll entertain a motion amending our previous order and actually reducing the fine to $325 payable when...
30 days.
Some are possible for you to
get along with 30 days. If it's possible, I can get along with 30 days. Right now, I'm kind of in the financial bind at the moment.
60 days
would be fine. 60 days, I appreciate it. Yeah, maybe I can do it before then. But give me a little time, I appreciate it.
Fine, we pay a little within 60 days.
Some
by Mr. Bourne.
Second.
Second
by Mr. I make the payment.
Motion by Mr. Smart, second by Mr. Bourne. So, any questions or comments by members of the board? So, hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed, same sign. Motion carries. I'd like to move on to our continued cases, beginning with case number one, which is CEB 0505215, Masonic Lodge.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. You told me that I told you to not message you?
Yes.
Mr. Andy?
Michael Mitchell, president of Paternal Lot, number 36.
Denzel. Yes, if I can, Mr. Chair, can we start with just getting an understanding where they stand right now? I mean, quite honestly, everything that we've asked them to do, they've been doing, which is keeping up the property and filing these applications. So we don't know what's happened with the grant application.
I'm sorry, I don't know if you got one of these or not.
No, I don't.
I got my copy. That's yours. Thank you. I wanted to just bring you up to date that our packet did go before the board. If you have a letter in front of you now, there was a docket that needed to be incorporated into the packet, and we were not able to get that. And so the city rep is here now to explain to the board the process that we were trying to go through to get that docket. And so Mr. Bryant is going to answer. Try to help us out with that, and we are still in the process of working with the city to get the docket that we need to show the city that we do have the matching grant. The redevelopment board have given us, rewarded us $150,000. We needed a letter from the city to confirm that, but we were unable to get that letter. So Brian is going to elaborate on that a little more, but we are still in the process of working on that.
Mr. Mitchell, according to the letter that you provided for us, it stated that if you did not provide documentation regarding the contribution, that your application would be rendered ineligible. Is that correct?
Has yes, I did, and I did, because I did not get the letter, Mr. President, so we had to pull the packet.
Okay. Mr. Bryan, if you want to come forward, just raise your hand and be sworn.
I do. Charles Bryant, Redevelopment Project Manager. The process that Mr. Mitchell is talking about, the information was provided to Midtown Redevelopment Area Board. It went before them. Their request was approved for $150,000. That request has to be forwarded to the CRA in order for funding to be awarded to the Masonic Lodge. What happened is we have been in negotiation with the lodge. There are some things that we told them that they need to do, including fixing up the building and bringing it up to code, which they have done. Other thing is that we had to work out some details as to usage of that facility. Those details has not been worked out with the city yet. That's why they could not get the letter from the city and be their request be forwarded to the CRA for the fund aspect of it. But I came this morning to speak basically upon the buildings itself. I have a picture here of what the building looked like prior to it being a court enforcement. And a picture of after. The building inspector himself went out with me. We went through the building. He told them certain things that they needed to do, including painting the outside, cleaning up the outside of the building, which they have done. They made some structural changes to the building to make sure that it was secure and safe. They did exactly what the building inspector asked them to do. He went back out and re-inspected. As far as the redevelopment department is concerned, the building is secure, it's safe, according to the building inspector. I wanted to bring some other pictures of buildings that we have in the redevelopment area that's been boarded up for years. These buildings have let you see the pictures have been boarded up for years and nothing has been done. And we would like for the board to consider the Masonic Lodge as another one of these buildings that until they can get their grant in place, they are working on it. Everything is fine with the redevelopment department as far as what they're doing. I'm in constant contact with Michael Mitchell. He's given me updates on what's going on with the projects, and we're still working trying to get the negotiations through so we can present the packet to the CRA for possible funding of the project form. But I actually, the board to consider closing out the case unless he has any violations that the code enforcement department would report back to me, to this board, and not consider finding them.
Mr. Bryant, when did the process start for you all, and what, you know, your negotiations with the lodge in terms of securing the funding and receiving a letter that was required in order for them to receive funding from the state of Florida?
Okay.
Do you remember the date?
I don't remember the exact date. I do have a memorandum that I wrote that talks about the funding process, and this was addressed to the Midtown Area Board. This was January 13th, 2009, that I wrote this particular memo to the board addressing the Masonic Lodge and the actions, some of the actions that they were taking to get this facility up to speed.
Which board were you addressing?
The Midtown Redevelopment Area Board.
And that was in 2009?
Yes, January 13th.
And this requirement was dated November 5th, 2010, so we're talking almost 2 years. If your letter was dated January 9th or January 2009.
Well, originally they sought funding, I think it was in 2009, but the state was short on funding, and that's why they couldn't go through the process that year. I have a document. I don't have it with me, but I do have a letter from the state saying that they didn't fund any applicants that year.
No, the point I'm trying to make is if you had written a letter and they had been through the process to secure funding from the Midtown Redevelopment Board, I would think there should have been a letter of some kind or some documentation stating whether or not that board was going to provide funding or a letter as required by this document almost a year later.
The problem is the Midtown Redevelopment Board is an advisory board. They can't provide a letter saying that they're going to fund the project. It has to go through the CRA. And when it went before the Midtown Redevelopment Board, it was approved by that board. But it still had to go forward to the CRA because they're the only ones authorized to award them funding of that project.
And you said I've seen that it was the opinion of the Midtown Board that they would approve or recommend that to the CRA that the lodge would receive funding?
Yes.
Okay, again, that was 2009. The lodge had until November 5th, 2010. In order to secure any letters that were required in order to receive funding from the state. What I'm thinking is, I'm just wondering, and maybe other members of the board as well are wondering, well, what took so long to get the approval for the letter a year later, even a year later?
Mr. Chair, I think what happened, once the package, I was on the Midtown Board at the time, once the package went up, this letter came back in October stating that they needed to get this information in to know by them and by November. But you could not provide this letter because negotiations are going with the CRA to support the documents that they needed. Everything was in time. This letter could not go in because of negotiations with the CRA. So that's basically where it is.
Now, is this money, is this earmarked money or is this pretend money? I mean, has this money actually been put aside?
No, it has not. It has not. Because, like I say, the Midtown Redevelopment Board don't have authority. It doesn't have authorization to fund any project. They only can recommend
it. Okay. And this is mayor. You call it the CRA. It's the city commission.
Yes.
It's the same thing. I wish we would stop pretending like they're different. Anyway, the city commission has not been notified of this in any way that this is pending.
Yes.
They have been told.
No, they have not been notified. It has not went before them because of the negotiations that we have to do, that we've been doing with the Masonic Lodge to get it so we can present it to them.
Okay. What can you do to help get this process? Is it the applicant's problem that he has not done the things you've asked him, or is it a paperwork problem?
Well, there were some negotiations being done by one of our city attorneys with the Masonic Lodge attorney. I don't know where those negotiations are at this time, but that's what I worked with Masonic Lodge until we got to the point where they say, well, we'll let the attorneys work it out. So that's where the negotiations are.
Jackson.
Well, just so no one get confused, I can't speak to that. I don't really know anything about what's been going on with negotiations with the city attorney's office and Masonic Lodge. But what I would like to speak to on behalf of the code department and having sat down and looking at this situation, I believe it was probably a year ago or maybe a little less than that there was a suggestion of a small fine to kind of let this case go. But in discussing it with the code department, that's really not the real thought of the department. What the thought is this. We're kind of left with a dilemma. I believe if I remember the time period that was stated before, I guess it's been about 7, maybe even 8 years that we've been dealing with this. I've been with the code department for the last 12 years. And so I've been with Mike for a long, you know, more than half of that. And everything that we know as far as relate to code enforcement, they've done what we wanted them to do. But we've never had a history of defining a property that remains boarded and vacant as being in compliance. So we're not comfortable with that being a definition from the division that it's in compliance. However, a decision of this board, I think, may be warranted to either you may want to sit and wait and see what happens. If you want, I mean, we've been 7-8 years. It's been clean. It's been painted. It's been, you know, appearance-wise, it's been appropriate. Or you may want to kind of call this a point of when we call this, you know, call a hand on here, and either call for a vote and start a minimum fine. And doesn't it eliminate code having to go back and review and determine what's going on, but it's not really something that's still floating on the docket and coming back for reviews, and it leaves them open to just go ahead and resolve. It really, everything that we've seen gives the appearance of an effort to get the funding needed by an organization that's not for profit on a historic building to restore and reutilize it. Again, I don't know anything about what's going on concerning negotiations or what the nature of the negotiations are, so I don't want to try and even speak to those or say they're good or bad or anything else. I don't know. But from everything that code knows about the case, it's been a property that's been kept up. The upkeep has been done as when we requested, and everything's been done. So as I'm saying, our thought is you can take a vote for a small fine. You can make a determination that you're going to dismiss the case and we can bring it back if it should get into a manner which leaves it as something that's not satisfactory. Or you can wait and see what happens and maybe be satisfied that we're getting closer.
Mr. Chair, or I guess this question will go to code. The original fine, or what we were considering with this building, hasn't that been addressed?
Yes. It says failure to repair or demolish. I want to know, too, has it been repaired to the point where we can say that it's in compliance?
Is it usable right at this point? Could they go and operate in the I'm sorry, I'll make this a question before. Mm-hmm. Is the structure as it is right now usable and ready for operation?
I haven't been inside to say that, so I'll let
no. I would say no, because the electrical part of it, you know, there's no meter on it. It's not operational where they could go in and start using it. But it has been determined by the building official that it's safe and it's not an eyesore in the community. I would recommend that we dismiss the case. We don't have any problems with this property. Everything that they've been asked to do, they've done it. As recently as this past weekend, the code inspector went out. He found a window broke. He gave them some things that they needed to do. They went out and done it. That's better than other properties in the community that I see that we have real issues. We don't have an issue with that building. From a redevelopment standpoint, it's clean. If there's a problem, I go to Mr. Mitchell. he goes out right away addressing it. I know he just responded, I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday of last week, when I was brought up to speed by the code inspector, Mr. Sykes, that there was an issue. I addressed it with Mr. Mitchell. He addressed it that same weekend. It's not a problem property. They should not be fined.
Okay. So it's been secured to city standards?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion. Since this property has met our requirements as a city, that we go ahead and dismiss the case, and we treat it like we do all cases. If anything new comes up, the code enforcement officer will let us know that something comes up. There's no need of us keeping it on the books.
Before we decide, if I may, I'd like to ask Mr. Jackson a question, or the code inspector. Is it required that they have a meter and electricity in the building in order for it to be inhabited?
I mean, for it to be truly in compliance, I would expect that that's, and I'll look to the inspector. And I'm okay with Mr. Mitchell speaking to that.
I want to address that, if I may. We did have a meter on there, but every time I put a meter on there, somebody came and took it. So that's why we don't have a meter there. We don't have the money to keep buying a meter. So that's why we had it removed. We are no longer using the building. We meet now at my church on the night that we're supposed to meet. So the water's going to be turned off until we are ready to go back into the building.
What's your time frame for that, Mr. Mitchell? I'm just curious. I'm trying to work with you all, because you all have done everything that we pretty much asked. I can agree with that. I'm not necessarily seeking a fine personally, but I want to know that the building,
again,
Brian has already said the building is safe. The inspector's confirmed that. I believe Mr. Jackson is also kind of, you know, saying the same thing. I just want to know, if possible, because I don't want to set the city up for any type of liabilities down the road or anything that we have a precedence was set with this case, and it comes back to haunt the city.
If I could just speak to that, I think the precedent that the city wants to make sure, or the code division wants to make sure it makes clear and not established, or we want to make clear through this event, is that we are not in a position to take a building that's in the process of reaching a stage of completion and defining it as compliance. I mean, you still have the windows boarded because you're working on something. We recognize that they're working on something, and we strongly are encouraged and happy and pleased that they are working on it. We're not in any way opposed or objecting to a decision. Ultimately, that's a decision of dismissal. It's just not a decision that we can recommend, and as a matter of practice, that we probably ought to be recommending. Nevertheless, we will acknowledge that they've done everything. It has the appropriateness of its appearance. It's supported by the redevelopment board in its area, and we just have no reason we have nothing else that we really can do in enforcement other than look to them accomplishing the goal that they've been working on for quite some time, and that's getting the funds to ultimately move in and do the final stages that would be consistent with someone who's occupying the structure.
Mr. Mitchell, you said that this application that was submitted to the state of Florida was rendered ineligible based on the fact that you didn't get the documentation. Mr. Bryant, do you agree?
Yes.
Where do we go from here with funding?
Mr. President, we still got, we are still going to work with the redevelopment and trying to come to the conclusion of what we need to do. When I met with my brethren on Friday, I was given the leisure to do what I need to do as the president. Whatever document need to be signed with the redevelopment, I have been given permission to do that, and we're pushing now because the next board that is going to convene is going to be in July. So we're really pushing with Mr. Reed and Mr. Bryant so that we can come to some kind of happy medium to at least just get a letter. And that's basically what I need, because the same packet is going back up, and I just need a letter confirming that we do have a grant to match the money that's up we are requesting.
Mr. Mitchell, what is it going to take to complete this building 100% and allow your brethren and your lodge to move back into the building and utilize it full time?
The grant that we are.
I don't mean money. I mean, what will it take in terms of repairing the building or whatever the case may be? What needs to be done?
Everything. You name it, it needs to be done. I built it over to you and I, and when I took over, that was the main goal that I stated earlier, Mr. President, when I first came before this board, that that we didn't know how long this project was going to take because of the size of, we're talking about inside structure, outside structure, and that's why we asked for a $300,000 grant, because once we get that, based on what the inspector said from the city, with that, that's more than enough for us to start from A to Z, and that's what I want to do with this here, go from A to Z to be able to finish it. And so we're talking about inside structure as well as the outside structure, and we got everything secured in our property.
Do you have a contractor on board who's giving you an estimate?
Yeah, we had a couple of them already, because that is also in our packet, because we had to present that to Tallahassee with the how much is it going to cost, so that is
and
in our packet also.
Contractors have given you estimates that are less than or equal to $300,000.
And right now, Mr. President, because due to the fact that when it was in, everything changed now.
Right.
So, you know, by the time it come back, I don't know what's going to happen with it now. We're going to have to probably start all over again with another contract, because when we first did it and we got the contract, we had one price. And now that the comment on change, his price may change.
We have a motion on the floor by Mr. Brown. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there a second by Ms. Condit? Did I say that correctly?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Are there any questions or comments by members of the board? The motion, if Mr. Brown would kindly restate it for us, so we'll all understand, is, I believe, to dismiss the case.
Yes. Amy, do you have a... you have it?
Yes.
Can you repeat it for me, please?
Oh, just a motion to dismiss.
Yes, okay. I just wanted to make sure. Time is flew by.
Questions or comments by members of the board? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, same sign.
Opposed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you.
I have one opposition. It's been dismissed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Case number two is CEB 0910158, which is in compliance as of February 2nd, 2011. Case number three is CEB 0910174, ADJ and SRJ Investments LLC. Address is 215 Kingston Avenue. Is the respondent present? Morning, John.
Morning. The city would like to impose the administrative fee of $250 for not having an occupational license. This particular case has been going on for quite some time. The property is in gross noncompliance, and the building department is on board with taking further action on it.
Is this the property where rooms were made to hold more than what they were designed to?
Originally, it was a three structures totaling 15 units.
Right.
zoning and the building department instructed the owner to reduce the occupancy.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And nothing's been done.
So and this still continues to have tenants?
Correct.
And they have no occupational license?
Correct.
John, well, are there any other violations that you're considering for the particular property?
Quite a bit. Quite a bit.
Chair would entertain a motion finding the respondent in noncompliance and imposing a one-time $250 administrative fee. Is there such a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Second by Mr. Brown. Second by Mrs.
Now, I have a question. What is the... What are we... By dismissing the issue of the occupational license for $250, he can continue to rent this property out for the next 10 years? Even though you have all these violations. I don't quite understand what we're accomplishing.
The other violations come before you is probably not going to be proper at this time, because they probably ultimately will be coming before you for the inspector to address.
Why are they separated?
Code enforcement could have cited them just for not having an occupational license, under the assumption that the building department would address the other issues in order to obtain the occupational license. However, if that were the case and there were noncompliance, you would be stuck just by getting the $250 administrative fee. And as we have seen before, we've had property owners say, well, I don't want an occupational license, I'll just write you a check for $250. So to avoid that, it's been separated, the occupational license and the other violations.
So can I understand something? Does this $250 fine include getting an occupational license? They aren't required to get an occupational license, even though they don't have one and they're being fined for not having one?
No, they remain, if I can speak to that, they remain in noncompliance. That's the penalty for the noncompliance.
And it's a one-time fine?
It's a one-time fixed fine. That's just statutory. It's because of Florida statutes, and we don't really have any control over that. So what we do have control over is being able to make findings as relate to the actual violations. The practice has been, and I think that's what the inspector is trying to explain and clarify, the practice has been that one will go out and will cite them for not having the license. Once they're cited for not having a license, they're responsible to get that worked out with the permits division, which has our trade, electrical and plumbing and so forth, have the trade type inspections. And that should take care of it, and we shouldn't have to worry about them again. If that doesn't take care of it, then we're left to go and deal with citing them on those violations that they chose not to do to remedy or resolve the need for the occupational license.
Because I see a lot of cases just in this agenda where that this is what the noncompliance is, failure to have the license.
Right. I mean, there's some quirks in there, and there's, and I'll be happy if we want to, have a discussion after the
hearing. Okay, that'd be fine. Thank you.
Hearing. Okay. Okay.
Are there any comments or questions going on, members of the board? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Can you see an effective date for that fine?
$250 fee.
Let's say effective today.
Today, yeah. Effective today, February 10th, 2011. Case number 4 is CDB 101084, 919 North Grandview LLC. Respondent here.
Yes.
Morning, Chief.
Morning.
Steve, you want to bring us up to speed? Well, after they're sworn in.
Can you step to the mic and say your name, please?
Hello, my name is James Ford, and that's my wife, Donna O'Connor.
And Rick Waters.
Do you all raise your right hand, please? Do you want to start with your testimony about the rise that you're going to turn up about the
truth? Yes, I can.
Good morning, Mr. Speaker, members of the board, and welcome, Luigi.
Thank you very much, Steve.
We are here for a determination of a fine based upon the allowance of 30 more days to complete due diligence for the assumption of this property. And before I make my recommendation, I would like to hear from the individual that was responsible for doing that due diligence, and we'll go from there.
Yes. Hello, my name is James Ford, and that's my wife, Donna. And to give you my background a little bit, is I used to work with the tools and construction and worked my way up. I was a painter, waterproofer, and general contractor. My wife's background, she worked for Rollins Higher Education. She was the department chair of the international department. And we have a family business, and we also own property in Volusia County. And as you know, you never saw me here, so we do the right thing. And we finally got a contract on the property, and we're going to close within 14 days. And I mentioned that, like you said, $500 is in the contract. To me, we put $10,000 down deposit, and White is the attorney that's going to be closing it. We reside in 1926 old home in Winter Park, and we updated that. And I was also in a meeting yesterday for 4 hours with the historical district. And the thing was, is Richard was even thinking about taking this home down and kind of broke my heart. So that's the reason I'm here. And we're going to buy it and work with it. And I'll also work with the gentleman right here. And I want to thank you for all your hard work. You're making me feel a lot better. I'm a little leery about Daytona, honestly, but how you're enforcing the codes and working hard, you really have your hands full. And I want to thank you for all doing all of this work, and I appreciate it sincerely. And all the values aren't going to go up. So I have the funding and everything else for the deal, so it's pretty well a done deal. And providing I don't have any kind of issues with closing at the title, as you know, you're a lawyer. All right, thank you.
Once you close on the property, sir, how long before you're able to address and fix the problems?
I'm going to start addressing it immediately.
Okay.
Yeah, like, you know, the next day. I'm going to also do something this week. I'm going over there. I'm starting to address it. I got the electrician. I got the window guy coming over, getting me all estimates. I got a whole list, and I'm going to do some work while I'm here now. So I'm going to attack it immediately.
So what would you give as an estimate as to the time it would take for you to get the property into compliance?
I think within 90 days or sooner, you know. I'm willing to, if you can extend it to that, I'm willing to give a monthly written report. My wife does the detail. I get the honey-do list. She's really in charge. So she takes care of that. I can give you a report. Whatever you need, I'm willing to do. So, and I appreciate you really doing a great job, and I'm a little concerned what I heard at the meeting, and you really were on top of it, so thank you, with the other compliance people.
Mr. Waters, can you speak to the contract or the situation that you're currently in terms of selling the property?
Yeah, what Jim said is correct. We have, we're scheduled to close in 14 days on the property, and, you know, as far as I've seen, everything is... Basically, I can only reiterate what Jim said.
Okay. So, Steve?
Yeah, I want to say, if you don't mind saying something. Mr. Waters is a finance guy, and that's one of my shortcomings. I'm an old construction worker. He's really out of his league. We finally caught somebody after 4 years. They arrested him. We gave him a deposit to do work, and he took care. And Orange County's prosecuting him this month. And the reason I really pushed on it is to stop that, you know. And I appreciate you working hard to stop that. So it's really challenging. You got your hands full. So I appreciate it. So I'm just going to share.
Thank you.
Well, as we know, this is a historical house. Structurally, it has a lot of potential. So, with the thought process of not allowing this to become like our infamous concrete wall that went for a year before it almost killed somebody, I would agree with this gentleman and like to give him the opportunity to follow through with the due diligence in 14 days. In fact, until the end of the 10th of next month, which is, I believe, the next cutoff. But if it doesn't happen, I would like to have $200 per day retroactive to today at that point. If the funding falls, if nothing happens, if the place isn't secured or maintained secured, because that's part of the issue. And also, the structural issues on the south side of this are obviously the most important because it's structural and it's falling apart. But there's a laundry list of other issues, as you know, as you can see by the photographs. It's not just that. 90 days, I believe, with a contractor that is diligent, has all the equipment, tools, and the history, yeah, it's doable. With a crew, contractors, subcontractors, things like that, yes. So I would agree with it, but definitely... with the stipulation of a retroactive fine of $200 per day, if not, and monthly updates for the board.
Let me ask Mr. Ford a question just for a moment.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Ford, are you certain that you can have this transaction closed within 14 days?
Yes, I am. We have the funding. It's their side now. We didn't do a title search and all of that.
Closing, sometimes things come up.
And yeah, yeah.
Just doesn't close. You do understand that Mr. Alderman is asking that a fine be imposed if it is not closed within 14 days. It's not any bearing it on you. It's Mr. Waters, actually.
Yes.
But I just want to be certain that you believe that you can get it done within 14 days because the fine, if we agree and vote on it, will be retroactive. Again, that's something that would be a burden of Mr. Waters, not yourself. I just want to... It would give you a fair opportunity to make sure it's closed within the time frame that you said that it would be.
Well, we have the funding. The only problem that we would have, since you all know real estate, if there's title issues or something, you know, I'm not closing, you know. I like to be, I want to have a nice relationship that, you know, I come up here and you know who I am. But I definitely want it. Okay. 1,000%. It's a little challenging. So, yes. Yes, sir.
Chair would entertain a motion amending our previous.
If for some reason, you know, Jim decided not to purchase the property, we would need to tear it down. That's our internal, that's what's, we decided would have to happen, and it is. It is terrible, but given the challenges and our, the way we're set up, it's just not a viable thing for us. I've been trying to manage these processes out here for a while, and it's just not something that I found that we can do effectively. It's very difficult to deal with the construction people out here and all that kind of thing, so it's unfortunate, but that is what we'd have to do. So if everything looks like Jim is going to be buying the property, but if for some reason he didn't buy it, what we would be doing immediately is basically having the building torn down. I don't know that a retroactive fine, given that we allowed some time for this transaction, and basically we stopped that process, I don't know that a retroactive fine would be, A, it would necessarily would accomplish anything, and B, would necessarily be fair given the current circumstances. Does that make sense?
I have a question for you, Mr. Waters.
Yeah, sure.
Considering that this case goes back to July 15, 2010,
right. Uh-huh.
When you were first notified.
Correct.
Understanding what you just said and the position that you will be in if Mr. Ford doesn't purchase the property,
correct.
How long do you think it would take you to acquire a demolition permit?
I've never had to acquire one before. I assume the demolition guy goes in and...
It's not taking a long period of time. I would say within about 2 weeks after the 14 days that have elapsed, you should have a demolition permit in your hand, and the property could be torn down.
Correct.
It is in the historic district.
Well, that's a different matter.
It's in the Seabreeze area. Mm-hmm. Does that take longer?
Absolutely. Yes.
Generally.
Yes, okay. It does. Steve?
Do you have any, to address your issue about...
Well, if I could say something.
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
We're buying it. We care about it. I mean, it's terrible to tear a beautiful building like that down. That's all. Breaks my heart even to think it as part of the community. Right?
Well, we understand that, Mr. Ford, but still, again, if you have your title search done and there's a problem, then you might back out, and if we don't take appropriate action now... Then we still have a problem that will exist. The building will still be in non-compliance, and then we'll have to take additional action, whereas we can deal with it right now. Steve, let me ask you a couple of questions. Concerning the fact that this is an historic district and Mr. Waters is required to tear it down or demolish it because Mr. Ford doesn't proceed with the purchase, are you willing to reconsider maybe the retroactive portion of your request for fine and maybe allow him the opportunity to secure a demolition permit, or is it something that you want to hold steady to?
I would recommend that it maintain in place, but if the sale does not go through, the demolition permit, as you know, will only take a couple of weeks, and there's quite a few competent demo construction companies out there.
I think what's complicating this particular matter is the fact that it's in a historic district.
Yes, but either way, the permit's going to have to be pulled. It's going to have to go through board meetings and a number of other issues to get this thing approval for a demo through the historical district. I do understand that. So if it comes to that point, then obviously the $200 a day is a waste of time.
My problem was if it had been a property that was not in a historic district, we can probably demolish it within a few days to a couple of weeks. I understand that, but again, as Kundick said, it's in a historic district.
And I'm a bit vague on
that. We want to be fair in all of our actions, I'm pretty sure, if I speak for the board. And considering that, which is out of the control of Mr. Waters, I mean, maybe we want to allow him an opportunity to go through the process without burdening him with a fine of $200 retroactive. That's the point I'm trying to drive through.
Okay, I'll withdraw that recommendation. And
if we continue this case till next month and then decide on action, then would we be in a better circumstance? Because, the sale would have went through or not have went through.
Okay, yes.
Can I say just a second.
Sure. I'm just a bit cautious. When they start in July and it's almost July again, I get a little bit nervous. So
No, we're only looking at our meeting in March 10th.
Correct.
March 10th. At that time, we'll know if Mr. Ford has actually purchased the property. He can, at that time, give us an update whether he's here in person or he provides information to you.
Okay.
So the board itself will be in a better position to make some decisions based on your recommendations as well.
Let's do this. Amend till the next hearing.
Okay.
If Mr. Brown did not make a motion to continue the case, I'd like to do so.
You just go ahead and beat me to it, Mr. Smart.
How about that?
Until what date?
Next board meeting.
March 10th.
March 10th.
Okay.
Continue to March 10th.
We have a motion by Mr. Smart to continue the case until March 2nd, 2011. We have a second by Mr. Brown. Are there questions or comments by members of the board?
Was it March 10th?
Yes.
Okay.
March 10th.
10th.
Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Same sign.
Motion carries. I just really want to thank the board for how hard you're trying to take care of the community and so much changes over the years since I've been here since 1930. Of course, my property in Volusia County is in New Smyrna Beach. And one of the reasons I didn't buy here, I was concerned about the community. And now I see changes. That's why I want to buy. And I see how hard you're working. And you really have your hands full. And also the code people, they're risking their lives, you know. It's not dealing with some of these people. And I appreciate all your hard work sincerely. And you need to know that. Sometimes you feel like, geez, I'm working so hard. You know, you don't. And I appreciate it. And other people do. So I want to thank you all. Thank you very much for hearing me out and working with me.
We thank you for your comments, and will you be able to either be here for our March 10th meeting or provide some documentation?
Yes, I will. I will be here personally, because the problem I'm having with them, even in negotiations, they're in Colorado. I like to look people in the eye, eyeball to eyeball, you know. I think I'm old school.
Can I just tell you something now?
Yeah.
If the show goes through, we'll be asking to add you onto the case.
Yes.
Whether or not we'll actually pull him off the case, that's something typically we don't.
Okay.
So we'll probably just be adding you on, but if you're consenting to that now,
yeah.
If
consenting, that's not a problem. Yeah.
We'll go ahead and make sure that happens at the next meeting.
If you need to make a motion,
well, we don't need to do anything. Yeah. That's not on yet, but
yes, sir, I will.
If the transaction is complete, we'll go ahead and add him on.
Yeah. Thanks again. Thanks for so much for hearing me out. I really appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thanks. Thank you, sir.
Case number 5 is CEB 1110192, Anna and John Zahn. The property address is 221 Blanche Place. Is the respondent here?
I don't believe he's going to show up today.
Morning, Tom.
Morning. Good. He needs at least 2 more weeks to finish painting his back buildings, and the city has no objection to amend it to next cutoff.
Chair will entertain a motion to amend our previous order and allow him to respond until March 2nd, 2011, and come into compliance be returned to the board for consideration of a fine of $1,000 per day.
So moved. Second.
Motion by Mr. Brown, second by Mr. Lawrence. Are there any questions or comments by members of the board? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Yep.
Opposed, same sign. To expedite the cases, because we have individuals who are here, if it's okay but with the board, can we just call those persons up that are present?
Mm-hmm.
If you have a case that's on the agenda, would you individually please come forward, and we can probably take your cases out of order just so you won't have to wait around.
I'll take number 8.
Number 8.
232 South Seneca.
Okay. Case number 8 is CEB 1210220, Daniel Derlick. The address is 232 South Seneca Boulevard.
Good morning. Kendra
Holloway. Good morning. Ms. Holloway, what's your position or?
I'm the property manager with Exit Realty. I manage the property.
Okay, Danny, what can you tell us about?
Well, we are about halfway through.
Let us hear from the inspector.
Well, I can let her. What happened is that we amended from the last board. And I recently got in contact with Ms. Holloway, and she's advised me on what's going on. And I believe by next cutoff, she should be in compliance, and she's going to let you know what was the holdup.
Go ahead, follow up.
Well, lack of communication basically was the holdup, and difficulty in finding a licensed guy who would show up and give a bid who could pull the permit. So we found one. He's about halfway through with the work, and we should be ready for a reinspection Monday.
Okay. Man, until next cutoff?
Yes.
All right. Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion that we amend the previous order to our next cutoff of March, I believe that is 10th, 2nd, 2011.
We have a motion by Mr. Brown. Is there a second?
Second.
Smart. Any questions or comments by members of the board? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed, same sign. Thank you, Ms. Holloway.
What case is it?
Case number? There's two of them, actually. CEB 0211.
What's the number?
14 and 15.
15 and 16.
15. Okay. Both of those are Danny.
Danny does yours as well.
15. 15 and 16.
New cases. It's case number CEB 021114, Robert J. Is it Dittel?
Dittel.
Dittel. The property address is 129 Blue Heron Drive, number C.
I do.
Danny, what would you like to say about that?
Well, so far time I've seen him, and since the case lawyer I talked to him once before, apparently he has 129 Blue Heron C and D. We can discuss them both together.
Okay.
At the same time. Seems that he's under the roof kind of grade as in owning both properties and renting them both out. Having two tenants advised from the HOA president, and no license has been applied for.
Tony, do I need to read 16 into the record now, or just wait?
Whichever way you want to read, the way it works.
Okay.
Let me know. Would
you like to do them individually or together?
Whatever's going to be
I'll suggest individually.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll be fine.
Okay. What would you like to tell us, Mr. Dittel?
First off, Unit D is not rented, nor has it been rented.
Number C first.
Okay, you want to do C first?
Case number 15.
Okay. C, I filed Chapter 7 on both these condos I don't know how you say it, but released them. Like, I don't want them.
Chapter 7, meaning bankruptcy?
I'm sorry?
Bankruptcy.
Yes, I surrendered them in bankruptcy, yes. Okay. And I have a copy of the letter from my lawyer and from the courts stating that as of February 1st, 2010, I'm not responsible for. It's kind of like my hands are tied. There is a girl living in Unit C. I want her out of there badly. She's destroying the property, and I feel bad for the bank because it's bad enough I can't pay for it, but now she's wrecking. Her boyfriend's kicked in the front door a couple of times. I know there's holes in the walls. She doesn't pay any rent. She refuses to move. I was told by the clerk of courts for Volusia County that my hands are tied. There's nothing I can do because I filed Chapter 7 on them. So I can't even go get an order to have her evicted. So I'm hoping that maybe you guys can help me get her out of there.
Can you explain Chapter 7 to me, please, that kind of bankruptcy? Because there are different kinds of bankruptcy.
Well,
does
liquidation.
That it's liquidation.
Yeah,
okay. And that means you do not own the property anymore.
Well, there's technically?
Technically.
Yes.
You
because
do
they have
own
not
the
foreclosed on them yet. And I've worked.
So you are in foreclosure. It has not happened yet.
They have not even begun foreclosure because the courts are so backed up on foreclosure. And I even called the lawyers. One of them's in like Utah, and the other one's here in Florida. And I said, listen. I said, you don't have to go to court. I said, I'll sign it over to you right now. Just get them. Take them away from me. I'm tired of dealing with them. And they said they can't do it. It's got to go through court. Unit D, I know we're working on C, but Unit D was supposed to go to court 2 months ago. The date was canceled. I wasn't even informed. I showed up at court. They said it's been canceled. I said, when's the next hearing? They said, we don't have a date yet. I still haven't heard anything.
Yeah,
sure. These are the bankruptcy papers.
Hold on, Mr. Dittel. Jackson, bankruptcy and foreclosure are two different matters. If I'm speaking correctly, would you confirm that or deny that?
No,
you
said
yes, sir. Yeah. So one is totally different than the other. If he has released his ownership
correct
through bankruptcy, then...
Well, what's going to happen is the bankruptcy court is not going to take the property.
He's offering it to them right. to release it. But because the mortgage is more than the value, they don't want it. So eventually he's going to be discharged from bankruptcy.
I already was.
Okay.
February 1st. I have the papers there.
Okay. Once he's discharged on February 1st, now the bank is free to start a foreclosure.
Okay.
It'll be against him, not against the bankruptcy court.
Okay.
And so that'll take these days, you know, a year.
It's been over a year.
Right, but they can only start it as of February 1st right. once you've been discharged.
Yeah, just some clear, just another language. He's not in bankruptcy.
Right.
He's been discharged. That means that
the bankruptcy court
no longer has any jurisdiction, and it's back to him and the foreclosure as it relates to these properties.
So he's still considered the owner of the property in spite of the bankruptcy. Is that what you all are saying?
He's definitely the owner.
Correct.
So, I mean, and I even have, here's a letter I got from Pelican Bay that she ran the gate, I believe it was on February 2nd, and I'm like, call the cops, have her arrested, tow her car, do whatever you want to do. I mean, help me.
You know, I can say this up.
My hands are tied. I can't do anything.
I'm not trying to be an advisor, but you said you're relying on the court telling you what your powers and responsibilities are. You may want to talk to an attorney.
I did.
And see where you are at this stage.
I did, and he agreed with her.
Okay. All right.
My hands are tied. Okay. There's nothing I can do because I surrendered them in bankruptcy. So I'm stuck in a catch-22.
I'm hearing some contradictory language myself. I don't know anybody else that's hearing it, but it seems as though Mr. Dattel is saying he's not the owner. But the attorneys that are present are saying, well, some of the attorneys.
No, I didn't.
He does own the property.
I don't know why he can't do an eviction.
Me neither, right?
The bankruptcy.
Well, number one, I haven't worked since May of last year.
Well, yeah, there's
so costs, so I don't have the money to evict her anyway. Okay. She doesn't pay rent. She has no lease. I don't see why you guys can't throw her out.
Clarification. No legal prohibition for her to seek eviction.
Okay.
That I'm aware of.
No,
I
didn't understand what you said.
Mr. Tell, you might want to consider, and I can't tell you to do this, but the service is available, to maybe seek some legal services that are possibly free.
Okay.
Or at least some advice. I'm not telling you where to go. I'm just telling you
can you
might be available. Do you agree that some of all of the violations existed at the time of notice for the property, which is located at 129 Blue Heron Drive, apartment or unit number C?
Unit C. I received a notice from Mr. Garcia, dated October 21st of 2010, and I called him and explained to him my situation.
Do you agree that you had a tenant at the time? And
I believe I agree that there's somebody living there. It's not my tenant.
Okay.
She decided to squat there. There's nothing I can do about it.
So
I mean, I have threatening phone calls that I could play them for you on my voicemail. Swearing at me and telling me to stay away from there, and she's going to have me arrested. And
that
frankly, I don't want to get arrested for it.
Chair would entertain a motion found in respondent non-compliance and allowing the respondent until March 2nd, 2011 to come into compliance to be returned to the board for consideration of a one-time administrative fee of $250. Is there such a motion?
So moved. Second.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Brown, second by Mr. Borens. Will there be any questions or comments by members of the board? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, same sign. I did that all in one walk for a reason. I said that he more or less had a tenant, or indeed a claimed tenant, but a person living there. And no occupation license has been applied for, so I just took care of it in one shot, if that was okay.
If I can, Mr. Chair, Mr. Diddle, from what you described, and
yes, sir.
Okay. From what you described, no one sat down and really got, you know, all your details, but you are, you know, at this stage, you're still your property owner with in foreclosure. You may very well walk out for at least getting some assistance or services from Central Florida Legal Services. So you may want to just try them and see if they can help you out and give you some
Central Florida Legal Services?
Is that what they're still called?
Yes.
Okay. I think so.
Yeah, that's
okay.
What I was alluding to.
Okay, yeah, maybe you can call that.
Okay.
There are barns they have in the where are barns
they have? They're right down.
I have a question. I'm kind of curious. He filed a Chapter 7, which means he
surrendered the property to the bankruptcy court. Basically, it went to the trustee.
Correct.
And now the bankruptcy is closed. There ought to be something in that order closing the estate surrendering the property back to him.
All we saw is the truck paper, the discharge paper. I don't know if there may be other paperwork and other.
Yeah, there should be something that would put him in a position where he can do what he must do.
Yeah. Can I have witness swear in and say our part on this seed property that she mentioned?
Sure. Okay.
Okay. Adriana Hollander.
What would you like to tell her, Ms. Hollander?
As a community association manager for Sandpiper Lake, I have spoken with the tenant, Amanda Ivy, who said, stated to me that she did not have a written lease, but she was paying in cash to Mr. Dittel. And we tried to collect rent from her through our attorney since the laws changed, and now the association would be able to collect as of July last year. And Mr. Halliker, the president of the association, decided not to pursue because he thought that she was... He wasn't sure she was going to pay, so the amount of money we were going to have to spend an attorney might be more expensive than collect the rent. And it is my understanding that she sent a registered letter to Mr. Dittel saying that she was paying the association rent, which she has not. And that's the main thing that I wanted to say, is that she does live there. She had, my understanding, a verbal rental agreement with him. And she was paying cash, and then she's not paying anybody.
I have a question. If she ran the gate, that's a violation of your condo rules. Do you have anything that can enforce an eviction based on that?
Okay, there are two associations. I represent the condominium, which is Sandpiper Lake. The gate is ruled by Pelican Bay, which is the homeowners. So I have nothing to do. I know there's a big deal to do with the barcodes to get into the gate that Mr. Dittel had cut in half and give her some, but
no,
that's nothing to me.
That's hearsay.
It's really the master association that deals with that. I don't.
Gets better as we go.
How long have you been the manager?
7 months.
7 months. You weren't terminated last week by Alan Halliker, the manager of Sandpiper Lake, the president?
I'm still on my contract.
You were terminated.
Okay, the questions go to us, not to each other.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But anyway, she is not the manager, the property manager. She was terminated last week by Alan Halliker, the president of the condo.
That's neither here nor there. We're dealing with your properties.
Okay. So, but she is right. She's not paying anybody. I talked to Alan Halliker for about 2 hours the other night, and he informed me that she has never given them a red cent as well. So she's just living there for free. And any advice that you gentlemen can give me and ladies, I would greatly appreciate it.
I have a question. Who's paying for the utilities?
She is.
The water water goes in the Sandpiper, correct?
Yeah, Sandpiper pays for the water.
And the electric, I haven't found out yet.
The electric's in her name.
Okay. With the recommendations that have been given to you, Mr. Dittel?
Yes.
How long do you think it will take for you to do what you need to do to get her evicted?
I don't know what I need to do. I plead ignorance to this. I have no clue. I've never done it before. So I'm going to go talk to this mid-Florida legal thing here on Orange Avenue. I'll find it.
Mid-Florida Legal Services or whatever the name of it is.
Okay. And talk to them. I mean, okay. I don't know. I have no idea what to do. I mean, I was told by one person that it takes 3 days. I was told by another person it takes months. So
sometimes it just depends on the case, I guess.
Right.
Let's move forward on case number 16, which is CEB 021115, Robert J. Dittel. The property is located at 129 Blue Heron Drive, Unit D, as in Delta. You've been sworn, Mr. Dittel. Now let's address the unit D.
There's nobody living there, and I have not rented that unit for well over a year.
Does Tim doesn't live there anymore?
Tim was not renting that unit.
You were first notified.
Yes, it's empty.
October 21st, 2010, according to the record and the inspection.
you're more than welcome to go inside and look.
All right. Yeah. Well, we can, the non-compliance next month, I'll do a re-inspection, verify there's no one in there, and get with the homeowners association president and make sure, and if it is, then close it out and put it in compliance.
Should we just continue it, Dan?
Yeah, so next up.
Chair would entertain a motion, amending our previous order, and continue the case.
Chair, this is an initial order of non-compliance.
Oh, just, okay. Continue the case until our March.
This is an initial order of non-compliance, so you're going to make a finding of the non-compliance.
Right. Okay. Mr. Dattel?
I'm not sure we can make an order of non-compliance. We don't. He says no one invented it.
But when the inspector went, someone was there.
When I cited it, from what my understanding, there was someone. Okay. So it's not.
When you went over there, my friend Tim was there.
Hold on, Mr. Dattel. Mr. Jackson has advised us previously that it's up to the board to determine if a compliance or non-compliance exists, not the respondent. So it's our decision as to non-compliance. Whether he says it was in compliance or not, it's our decision to make. Am I speaking correctly? Mr. Dattel, do you agree that some or all of the violations existed at the time of notice, and the notice was October 21st, 2010? Was there anyone in the occupying?
I was not renting the unit. That unit has not been rented for over a year, so I disagree with that.
Was there anyone living in the unit at the time of notice?
Yes, myself.
Besides yourself?
My roommate would stop by once in a while, and he would stay there once in a while because he lived in Deltona. If he had to close at night and work the next morning, he'd spend the night there, but he wasn't renting it.
Chair would entertain a motion finding the respondent in non-compliance. Is that such a motion?
Mr. Chair, I know a motion's on the floor. If I could ask a question.
Mike, the motion, the request is based on the inspector's.
Right.
That is provided.
Dana, when this was initially done, no contact was made with him?
Not physical contact, just verbally on the phone once when it first was cited.
For Unit D, and what did he say on the phone then?
When you gave me this, right? That's when you sent me
this. Correct.
And you told me to call Suzette Meeks.
I called
her twice and left her two messages. She never returned either one of my phone calls.
You said you would.
So you called her to apply for the license?
Times. I called her not to apply for a license because it's not rented. As I told this gentleman, it is not rented. I'm staying there and my friend stays there.
Just for the record.
Okay.
129 Blue Heron Drive C. This is where the Ivy...
Amanda Ivy, right.
Okay, 129 Blue Heron D is where he's saying no one's staying, and he's staying. And he has a property at one...
Comorant Circle.
Comorant Circle. Are you staying there?
Yes, that's my main residence.
Okay. So you're living in both places.
Yeah, is there a law against that?
Well, there's no short-term rent.
It's not rented. I own it.
Chair, I would ask if this gentleman would allow the inspector to speak.
Absolutely.
And allow him to speak.
He's talking to me and looking at me, so I'm answering.
Please allow the inspector to speak.
On the Volusia County Appraiser, in 129 Blue Heron C and D, it shows his...
It shows his address on 129 Blue Heron C and D as his property of address as one Comfort Circle on both. So, you know, I would think that you'd live in there and not both. I don't see.
So, based upon county documentation, he is not residing at D.
That's what it shows, yeah.
Okay.
But he is the owner. I'm going by the HOA president, the office, stating that there was tenants in both apartments, both units.
So, any documentation, Danny, or written documentation, I should say, from the HOA manager?
Get one from Laura Miller from the office in front of the East Gate.
Okay.
Is the property D fully furnished?
No furniture. There's all my furniture out of it.
So when you occasionally stay there, but you said you occasionally stay there, you sleep on the floor then?
I don't stay there anymore. I haven't stayed there because of all this.
When's the last time?
Because when I stay there, they're trying to say that I rent it because
I understand.
I'm there.
When is the last time anyone stayed there? Not a
months ago, sir.
Okay. So
Mr. Detel, are all these properties in foreclosure?
No.
Mr. Detel,
just Unit C.
And D.
And Unit D is
I surrendered both condos.
Both. Okay.
Yes. When you file Chapter 7, they actually, my house is also under Chapter 7. But as long as I continue to make my mortgage payment, I can keep my house. But if I don't make my mortgage payment, I just walk away from it. And Chapter 7's already been filed on it. But
thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Detel, have you slept at or utilized the unit for a living space since October 21st, 2010, meaning Unit D?
No, sir.
There's a motion, or actually, there's a request for a motion finding the respondent in non-compliance. Is there such a motion?
So moved.
I'll second it.
Mr. Herring. Second by Mr. Brown. Are there any additional questions or comments from members of the board?
Well, I just want Mr. Detel to understand that if no one is living there, this will be found out when the inspector goes back out. So, you know, this matter will be cleared up. This
right.
is just a matter of what we have to do as a
right.
board.
No. If I want to stay there, I can stay there. Is this correct?
It's your property.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. Just don't put any furniture in there.
You can do whatever you want to do. It's your property.
Well, because now you're telling me that I'm not in compliance because I had furniture in there.
Well,
is that correct?
No. It's based on the fact that the inspector believed that at the time of notice, Mr. Detel, that you had a tenant living there.
Okay.
Who did not have an occupational license that which would allow that.
Okay.
That's what the problem is.
Okay. And that's when they sent me the original notice. And I called them and let them know that I do not have a tenant there.
I respectfully take issue with the motion and the second. I think this is much ado about nothing. We have the respondent who's sworn and telling us that there was no one living there on October the 21st as a tenant. We have nothing but hearsay as to the fact that there is a tenant. I think this case should be dismissed immediately.
And I'm being completely honest with you. There is Amanda Ivy in Unit C, and nobody wants her out of there more than I do. I mean, if you wanted to listen to the threatening phone calls
yes.
that she's left me, you'd understand what I'm saying.
We're addressing Unit D at this particular
okay.
time, Mr. Detel. Let me ask the inspector a question, if you would.
I went on the property yesterday, did a reinspection on my own, not because I was called. And upon doing the reinspection, I didn't get an answer at the door. Could not tell if anybody's living. I'd be willing to close this case out, saying that he's in compliance as there was no tenant. And if there's another complaint, then I can always open another case and follow through.
Danny, let me just ask you this, Mark. At the time you believed there was a tenant, did you have any conversation or communication with the person that you believed?
No, I did not.
No.
On the recommendation of the code officer, I'll withdraw my original motion.
I'll withdraw the second as well.
I have a question for Mr. Garcia. Since October 21st, have you had the opportunity to be inside the unit?
No, I haven't.
Or see or look inside the unit?
No.
To determine if there's any furniture there?
No, I was never inside either of them.
Okay.
More than welcome to go and I have the key. He can come in today, tomorrow, whenever he wants. I'll give him my cell phone number. He can come and visit me anytime.
Mr. Chair, would it be appropriate for us just to, so that we don't dismiss the case until the inspector's had an opportunity, to continue case 16 for Unit D?
Well, again,
would that be appropriate? Or?
Jackson said this is a new case, so we have to take
determine
compliance or non compliance.
Continue the determination.
Well,
so I guess, can we continue the determination until next month?
Technically, and I guess you probably should be looking to the board attorney, but let me just say, technically, yes, sure you can. The point
one of your board members is well taken. You know, this is an adversarial proceeding. The city has, as always, and we always recognize our burden to come and prove our case. And y'all are got to make a decision whether we prove the case or not. If you believe that there's more information that you want to hear for us to prove this case, then you can continue it and we can bring additional information. You're allowed to do that. If you believe that we're at the pinnacle of all we can do with this case and you don't believe it's proven, then you're allowed to make that decision. Or you can go on at this stage and make a decision of a finding. I think there's one question I did want to ask of Mr. Patel. There was this mention of a Tim, and what was the circumstance with Tim? Was Tim living there?
No. He was a co-worker of mine at H.H. Gregg.
Okay.
And he lived in Deltona.
Okay.
And if he had to close at night and be in early the next morning, I would let him stay there with me.
Okay. And when was the end of that arrangement with Tim?
That was a long time ago.
Long before.
I haven't worked at H.H. Gregg since May of 2010.
Well before this inspector.
Correct.
Okay. And unfortunately, I think, you know, maybe there would have been some testimony that the property manager could have provided it had the appearance that we were done after she had said what she had to say and she left. If you know, if you want to allow the inspector time to go and see if there's more information that he could bring forward, that's a reasonable thing. I think the inspector's offering up that, in any sense, he kind of believes that it's probably in compliance now and that we may not gain much ground other than the finding itself in any sense.
Let me just ask one thing. Yeah, is it possible that he may have stayed there without you not knowing? I mean, does he have a...
He had a key, yes.
He had a key. So it's possible that he could have been there other times. Maybe other people have seen him from a hollow.
Well,
would you have known?
Well, he would come over and visit me as he does my house.
Well,
he would
I'm
come
saying,
to my house as well.
If he had a key... And he was staying already a couple of times. How do we know that he's been, you know, my proof is by the homeowner association, you know, they're telling me that the person is staying there. I'm not done. I was never called for re-inspection to go there and verify if he was still there.
Right. They were going by Tim's vehicle being parked on the property.
Right.
And just Tim and I would switch vehicles quite often. And I would use his vehicle. So if his vehicle was parked there, it doesn't mean he was there. They're just assuming. This is all assumption, that everybody's going on assumption. But nobody's ever knocked on the door and say, hey, Robert, are you in here or is somebody else in here? I mean...
And that's why I asked for the reason.
Right.
If you to call me, which you have not done for...
I did call you. I called twice, left messages. And
is his vehicle a GMC Envoy?
Yes, GMC Envoy, yes.
And one more thing to help you guys. This isn't a beyond reasonable doubt or, quite honestly, it's not really even a preponderance. It's kind of that kind of a standard, which is that greater weight. The way that these cases in administrative proceedings ultimately is, you know, the evidence that's being presented, is it being presented by substantial competence? Is it evidence that's substantial and competent and do you believe it? So in that sense, you kind of have a weighing of the evidence. So, and what you're trying to decide now is, what do you believe?
My question, Daniel, have you made contact with anyone who stated they resided at D?
Nobody answers the doors. Does they have a child?
We're clear on C.
Oh, okay.
And
D,
so
no, not D.
Because usually, whenever we consider, you know, compliance or non-compliance, we have something to go
right,
on.
Right. And that's the reason why I'm willing to close this one out, and just if there's another issue, I can reopen it with more evidence.
If I may, just given credence to Mr. Dattel's testimony for the previous case, he has stated that there is someone there. In this particular matter, though, he's saying no one's there. I don't see where we have any evidence to show that he would be contradicting himself for any gain for himself or otherwise. So
with that being said, we can close this.
I have to go back to what Mr. Bourne said before. I don't think we have any evidence that, you know, there's been someone staying there. I asked Mr. Garcia if you looked in the inside. You've been in the inside since October 21st. He said no. If we find him in noncompliance, we're in effect saying that Mr. Dattel is lying under oath.
I'm not sure who came out and did the initial inspection. I want to say maybe a year and two and a half years ago. But I did at one point have a license to rent Unit D. And an inspector came out, I bought my license. Then I said, I'm going to file bankruptcy. I'm not going to rent it anymore. The tenant moved out. I never renewed the license because I wasn't going to rent it anymore. I do not want an occupational license. I don't want tenants in it. I don't want to be bothered with those things. It's been nothing but a headache for me.
Well, then, Chair would entertain a motion withdrawing the case.
So moved.
Second.
I have a motion by Mr. Brown, second by Mr. Borns. Are there any questions or comments by members of the board? And that is based on the testimony of the respondent and information that was provided by the inspector as well of city. Are there any additional questions?
Yeah, and I just
would ask
that the language be
that
of a dismissal.
Okay.
Okay.
Mr. Brown, would you consider changing your motion to a dismissal?
Yeah, a friendly amendment to the language to dismissal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, when we dealt with case 15, we stated it was in non-compliance, but we didn't give a compliance date.
Yeah, if you want to see, there's nothing there. You see,
your own peace of mind.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Okay.
Are there any questions or comments by members of the board? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, same sign. The case has been dismissed, Mr. Detel, for number 16, and the compliance date for 15, Mr. Brown, was March 2nd.
Okay.
I did it all in one shot.
Gotcha.
Okay, we're all set.
Okay, thank you very much.
Case number 13.
What case number? Number 13.
Case number 13 is CEB 021112, Collette and Caroline. Is it Delanoy?
Yes.
At 122 Mitchell Place is the address. Tom, what can you tell us about it?
I'm sorry.
She has to be sworn.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
You're
Colette?
No, I'm Caroline.
Caroline, okay.
Let's hear from the inspector person.
I was City Hall complained that it was they had a rental. It was a rental property with no license on it.
Okay. Delano, what can you tell us?
I'm the president of the Mitchell Place complex, and I pretty much maintain that whole those 15 units. Myself, I do not rent my unit out to for monetary reasons. Like I don't get paid for having somebody in there. Most of the time, if somebody's in there, it's one of my family members from Europe. Or at this time, I have a friend that's in a divorce and he's staying in there. And he asked me to stay in there 4 or 5 months until he gets everything situated with his wife. The electricity is in my name. The water is in my name. But I did not know that I had to have a occupational license if somebody that was other than me, if they were staying there.
Ms. Delano, who is Collette?
She's my mother.
And your friend who is residing with you currently and going through a divorce, how long has he been there, and how long do you intend to let him stay there?
Well, he had told me prior to like 5 months, but he's been there over that time. Period. And he's my mechanic, so we exchange favors. There's no money exchanging. But if I need to get an occupational license because of that, I'm not opposed to it. I just did not know. And I was stated here that there was something that was given to me in 10 of 2009. I had just given birth that year. Around that time, and this paperwork was being sent to my mother's house, and I don't know if it was something that was signed for, or if it was, I was just never aware of it until today.
The green card was signed on the 8th of November, 2009.
Mr. Chair, it would be our position that if she's bothering, then that's equivalent to receiving benefits for the rental.
Okay. Illinois, do you agree that some or all of the violations existed at the time of notice, meaning that you were actually having someone residing at the residence that was not related to you?
Of 10:27, there was nobody there, but there is somebody now. That's where I'm at with that. That's where I didn't.
Chair would entertain a motion finding respondent in non-compliance.
So moved.
Second.
I have a motion by Mr. Brown, second by Mr. Smart. Are there any questions or comments by members of the board? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, same sign. That's an administrative thing we have to take care of, Ms. Delanois.
So what is my process now? I want to do what I have to do. I'm not here to...
What you would have to do is apply for a room... Mr. Clay can explain everything to you. Chair would entertain a motion. Do you think you can have your occupational license applied for and possibly received by March 2nd, Ms. Delanois?
It all depends on the process of the occupational license. Is it just something that I have to pay for, or is it something that I have to go...
Do you think that will be enough time?
Oh, yeah.
March 2nd? Okay, for her to get the inspections and everything done. And if not, we can always amend. Chair will entertain a motion allowing respondent until March 2nd, 2011 to come into compliance or be returned to the board for consideration of a one-time administrative fee of $250.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Brown, second by Mr. Bourne. Are there any questions or comments by members of the board? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, same sign.
And do you have a more current address?
Because
the tax roll address is 901 South Peninsula.
It's my mother's address. That when I purchased the house, I was only 18 years old. So at the time, it was because of my grandmother was deceased. So my mother signed with me on the paperwork because Mr. Kaufman had did a private mortgage, so he needed a parent on that. So that's why it's always stayed that way, and it was just never changed. It's been.
Do you have a more updated address?
I was just given that explanation for my purpose. It's 118 Boynton Boulevard, Daytona Beach, Florida.
Mr. Delanois, Mr. Cleve will explain to you the process, but we've allowed you until March 2nd, 2011 to bring the property into compliance, meaning that you have to have an occupational license. If you run into a problem, though, you can notify Mr. Cleve.
Okay, and as a homeowner of that association, I was never aware of having an occupational license at several condominiums.
It's not something that's administered by the homeowner association, the city code.
Okay, so it's not something that I could get...
Also by statute.
Okay, so it's not something that they could come back on me and say, well, you never told them that they... Okay, I just... thank you very much.
Thank you.
For your time.
Case number 30.
Case number 30 is CEB 021129, Ronald G. Rogers Revocable Trust Agreement dated 7/19/04 as to an undivided one half interest in Ronald F. Whitehouse as to an undivided one half interest and as tenants in common. Property is located at 731 North Oleander Avenue.
Can you say your name, please?
My name is Ronald Rogers.
Can you raise your right hand?
Do you
swear the testimony you're
about
to provide?
Yes, I do. Ronald Rogers. Yes, sir. For the board, take an extra minute or so, but I want to bring you up to speed with the property. Back in 2005, I bought this property for $207,000. I went in and rehabbed the property, and I spent over $65,000 personal money on this property. So it's not a derelict property in any way. About 2 years ago, I got the same kind of notice of dorm living, and I really didn't know what it was about. And at that time, we had a code enforcement fellow by the name of Mark, and I can't remember his name, and I have not dug that out. But in any case, what happened, it was dorm living, and I had the house rented to a company out of Destin, Florida, that was building the last condo beachside. So we had two engineers. The company wanted to lease the house. I leased it to two engineers. I got a fax machine. That was their base of operations. They wasn't even there on the weekends. They only slept there. So when I got the notice, I go and check. And there was a third person. One of them had moved his girlfriend in. So that allowed the third person. So when I went to my attorney, he called the city and said, Well, what the city of Daytona is doing is saying they're pushing the religious views over on the lessee. Because he and the lady's not married, they're saying that third person makes it illegal. And you're saying, and this was Mark he's talking to, that if these people get married, then you're illegal. The issue was dropped. Now, that didn't, at that time, I had already made those tenants mad, so I lost them. $1,600 a month. Shortly after that, I lost them. We put the house back up for sale. It is a furnished home. We put it back up for sale. Was not everybody in this room knows what's happened to the market. And we could not sell it. So again, we leased it to two pilots that teach at A&E College out here. And they teach the twin engine flight to some of the Emory-Riddle students, as well as others. One of the pilots moved, we had a year lease, one of the guys moved out, we renewed the lease with one pilot. He at that time signed the lease, but verbally told me he would probably get another person in there. He did. Well, now, with this summons, it looked like he's moved the third person. Well, as of this week, I will be in compliance. He is going to make that person leave, which is his house guest. But the reason, I guess I'm here today, I could have probably resolved the issue, but the reason I'm here today is I want to ask this commission and board to really look at what you're doing here. And I've got a home there that I've got nearly $300,000 invested in. It's 2,000 square feet. It's two bedrooms. It's a huge living area. It's got an encircled courtyard, two fireplaces, a huge laundry room, but I can only have two people living in the house. Now, I would in no way ever try to destroy that neighborhood and really make it a dorm living like what's going on in the city of Daytona now. And what I mean, and my daughter lives at 110 Flamingo Avenue here in Daytona Beach. There is a house across, it was a nice neighborhood. I've even been in this house at 109 that I'm going to tell you about. I've been in the house when it's under construction because that's what I do.
Hold on, Mr. Rogers, if you would, just speak to your property.
Sir.
And we would like to actually hear from the inspector as well.
But if could I have a couple more minutes? And I just want to ask the commission to look at what's going on here. We've got people, 10 and 12 people living in some homes, and then I've got a lot of money in my property, but the city of Daytona is saying I can't have over two people in this home.
If you are aware of a property where other individuals are non-related and they're living or cohabitating in a particular property, you have the right as a citizen of the Daytona Beach to call that in, and inspectors will, of course, go out and take a look and determine whether or not that exists, and then we can possibly bring a case against those individuals or that property. Tom, do you want to say something?
109 Flamingo, the one he's talking about is it's a drug rehab house, okay. And it's okay. Exempt.
Yeah. But it just happened in a residential neighborhood.
But they're exempt because they have the ADA.
But they're hiding behind the ADA.
Let us stay focused on this particular case.
Okay.
We'd like to hear from the inspector.
Thank you, sir. He is correct. This is a very nice home, but at this point he is in non-compliance, and I'd like to ask the next cutoff, and I'm confident that that third person will be gone before I get back from Kansas City.
Okay. Mr. Rogers, would you come up to the mic? Based on your testimony, but I'm going to I believe that you have already stated that you are in non-compliance, but I'm going to ask you for the record, do you agree that some of all the violations existed at the time of notice?
Sir, not that I was aware of. I was made aware of that. Just see, I really got tangled up there. I didn't give you the dates, but in November, I really got this summons, and I looked at it. I asked my wife because it said on there I did not have business license. So I looked on there. I told my wife we didn't pay the business license. She goes, checks on it, and what we had received back had the wrong address on it. So we assumed when she called and told the lady, said, you know, you've applied this to a different address. We do not own that address. It was corrected at that time. So that's how I ended up here today. It was actually corrected. But yes, there was a third person that I only found out last week.
Okay. Chair would entertain a motion finding respondent in noncompliance.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Borns, second by Mrs. Smart. Any question or comments from members of the board? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, same sign. Steve, what's your recommendation? We found the respondent in noncompliance.
Noncompliance, next cutoff.
Either one of the attorneys that are to my left, with this being dorm living, it's not a case whereby we have to basically, we're bound by the $250 limit, is that correct?
That's correct. Right. Yeah, it's a violation of the ordinance.
Okay.
General violation.
Chair would entertain a motion allowing the respondent until March 2nd, 2011 to come into compliance, be returned to the board for consideration of a fine of the $1,000 per day. Is there such a motion?
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Smart. Second. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Brown. Are there any questions or comments by members of the board? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 And you follow the same sign. What we've done, Mr. Rogers, we are allowing you until March 2nd, 2011 to come into compliance, or you'll be returned before this board for consideration of a fine up to $1,000 per day if the noncompliance continues.
Well, I have asked the tenant. His lease ends on April the 30th, and I've already notified him that that would not be renewed. So if something happened between now and then, you know, I'm going to check the house. I'm sure he will. After the guy, if something happens at that time, could I come back then and or can I tell you now that it's all over for sure by the 30th? Because his lease will not be renewed. But April 30th is a key day. I cannot, you know, he can say, well, there are visitors or something. Now, I do know that third party is leaving for sure this week. Actually, I think he's already gone, but I wanted to say this week.
Mr. Jackson, what's the state's position with that new information?
I'm not sure what he's saying. He's saying he'll be in compliance next month, but he's not going to
I'm in compliance this week, sir.
Okay, you're in compliance.
I'm in compliance now, but I'm saying that if you know, that he could always, because he's got a lease.
He has a lease.
And I'm worried about this $1,000. It's to one guy. So if something happened and he has another visitor, somebody sees a car there, or, you know, well, he's out there April the 30th. You can rest assured of that.
Well, my position is that he doesn't have a lease. He's got the contractor to do something that's contrary to the local law, which is if he's contracted to rent, as a third person or an additional person, and create this status of nonconformance, then, you know, but that's a legal battle y'all have to fight. As far as I'm concerned, you have to remain in compliance, and if they determine that you're not in compliance, that'll be responsibility of the inspectors to have to remedy that. And if it's okay, Mr. Chair, the things you have to say concerning the ordinance isn't falling on deaf ears, but this board is limited in its jurisdiction. Its jurisdiction is only to enforce the inspectors go out and they enforce the code, and then they make decisions in terms of determining whether or not that enforcement ultimately leads to, you know, fines will help remedy those issues of enforcement. But that's the limits of their jurisdiction. Once they would have power to make a change in the ordinance or make it the law different than it is now, will be this, your commission or the city commission. So that's where you want to take those types of concerns. The board doesn't have any power to change it. You have to clear what the law is and then, you know, follow.
So the process of going to have that change really needs to...
It's really with the commission and not...
Okay.
The,
thank you, Mr. Rogers.
Thank you.
But I would like to clarify, he is within a week in compliance for the dorm living, and then his lease is a whole different issue with the house. Basically going to start over again. Okay, right. Just to make sure.
So anyone else who would like to come forward and have their case heard? Are you a respondent, sir?
Mm-hmm.
Case number 6 is CEB 1110206, Robert B. Irving, Sr. The property is located at 712 Marion Street. We're here to consider imposition of a one-time administrative fee of $250.
You can do so. It's non-compliance, and is it having no contact at all?
Okay. Chair would entertain a motion imposing a one-time administrative fee, of $250 effective today.
So moved.
Second.
The motion Brown was the second by Mr. Bowens or Mr. Smart. Mr. Bowens.
Either way.
Okay.
It's okay. It's half and half.
Okay. Are there any questions or comments by members of the board? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, same sign. Case number 7 is CEB 1210209, Helena W. Montgomery Revocable Trust, dated 12-17-09. The property is located at 405 Wisteria Road.
Compliance, February 7th.
Thanks, Barbara. Case number 9 is CEB 11104, Ingrid Beltran. 309 and 311 Wisteria Road.
This case, as of yesterday, is in compliance, and as you know, I am seeking a will fine. And if she should come back, I'm seeking the maximum will fine.
Chair would entertain a motion finding respondent in compliance as of yesterday?
Yesterday,
the 2010, 2011. And considering a will fine for each additional occurrence. Is there such a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Brown, second by Mr. Barnes. Are there any questions or comments by members of the board? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Case number 10 is CEB 11105. It's in compliance as of February 1st, 2011. Case number 11 is CEB 11108, Merrill Properties LLC. We're here to consider a no occupational license and imposition of a one-time administrative fee of $250.
We'd like to amend that to the March cutoff.
Okay.
He failed his last re-inspection for his license, and he's only got a couple of things to correct, and he should be done.
Chair would entertain a motion amending our previous order and allowing the respondent until March 2nd, 2011 to come into compliance and be returned to the board for consideration of a one-time administrative fee of $250. So that's his motion.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Brown, second by Mr. Smart. Are there any questions or comments by members of the board? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, same sign. Case number 12 is CEB 021111, William B. and Lisa A. McCarthy. The property is located at 116 Michigan Avenue.
It's compliance 29 of 11.
We have disposed of case number 13. Case number 14 is CEB 021113, Daryl F. Lucas. The property is located at 309 Parkway Street. No occupational license.
City's requesting in the next meeting to amend this one to be reposted. The property needs to be reposted.
Okay. Amend next fellow.
Just amend
or continue? Yeah.
Just continue. Okay. Motion. Chair would entertain a motion continuing the case until our next meeting or cutoff, next cutoff time? Next meeting date of March 10th, 2011.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Brown, second by Mr. Smart. Are there any questions or comments by members of the board? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Same sign. We have disposed of case number 15. Case number 16 was also disposed of with a dismissal. Case number 17 is CEB 021116 is in compliance as of January 24, 2011. Case number 18, CEB 021117, Lisco Hogg Jr. Property is located at 1341 North Shangri-La Drive. The
here for termination of compliance and non-compliance, junk vehicle.
This one's non-compliance, next cutoff. I've had contact with the owner, and the vehicle has been removed from the backyard. The only thing remaining is the expired registrations on the boat and the trailer that's still in the rear. They just need to either remove it completely, which they said they would, or have it registered and then put it behind it.
Okay. Chair would entertain a motion found the respondent in non-compliance and allow the respondent until March 2nd, 2011 to come into compliance or be returned to the board for consideration of a fine of $1,000 per day.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Bourne, second by Mr. Smart. Are there any questions or comments by members of the board?
Mr. Chair, just have a quick question. Danny, the violation was for a junk vehicle, and then you referenced the boat tag. Is that fall under junk vehicle?
Yes.
Okay.
Are there any additional comments or questions by members of the board? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, same sign. Case number 19 is CEB-021118, Lynn M. Wilson. Property is located at 233 Tarragona Way for dilapidated fence and outside storage. We're here to determine compliance and non-compliance.
This property is also in non-compliance. I have had no contact, had to do a posting. I spoke to a neighbor, and the neighbor said that the owner is incarcerated. So.
Chair would entertain a motion finding respondent in non-compliance and allow the respondent until March 2nd, 2011 to come into compliance or be returned to the board for consideration of a fine up to $1,000 per day.
So moved. So, second.
Motion by Mr. Brown, second by Mr. Smart. Are there any questions or comments by members of the board? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, same sign. Case number 20 is CEB-021119.
Sir. The rest are all Steve's. I just have one more. It's the okay. Miscellaneous, if we could.
What is that, Dan?
It's the last one, miscellaneous.
So, last page.
It's an administrative request.
This one was an error. Permits and licensing had in their tracking system had a hold on it, but it was actually in compliance for showing because of the inspection had failed at one point. It's showing the hold, so I looked like it was still not passed, but it was in compliance as of January. It was passed on January 7th, 2011, which was before the actual hearing date.
Okay. Are we amending?
Just vacate.
Correct.
Chair would entertain a motion for case number 7, CDB-121129120 Morris Road, Margaret Daytona Corporation, vacating the order or fine.
So moved.
We have a motion.
Second.
By Mr. Borens. Are there any questions or comments by members of the board? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed, same sign.
Thank you.
Case number 20 is CEB-021119, August and Nan Taurasi. Property is located at 1888 North Atlantic Avenue. We're here to determine compliance and non-compliance.
Compliance 2-8.
Case number 21 is CEB-021120, William H. Leneve.
That's how you pronounce it.
Property is at 1236 Baylor Drive. No occupational license. We're going to determine compliance, non-compliance.
Non-compliance, next cutoff.
Chair would entertain a motion finding the respondent in non-compliance, allowing the respondent until March 2nd, 2011 to come into compliance or be returned to the board for consideration of a one-time administrative fee of $250.
So moved.
Second.
A motion by Mr. Borens, second by Mr. Brown. Are there any questions or comments by members of the board? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, same sign. Case number 22 is CEB-021121, Henry J. Siebert. Property is located at 1289 Baylor Drive. No occupational license or rental. Compliance or non-compliance?
Non-compliance, next cut off.
Chair would entertain a motion finding the respondent in non-compliance and allowing the respondent until March 2nd, 2011 to come into compliance will be returned to the board for consideration of a one-time administrative fee of $250.
So moved.
Second.
By Mr. Brown, second by Mr. Smart. Are there any questions or comments by members of the board? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Case number 23 is CV021122, which is in compliance as of January 28, 2011. Case number 24 is CEB021123, Stephen C. and Kai C. New, 329 Euclid Avenue. Compliance or non-compliance, parking car in the yard?
I would like to state it's in compliance as a 128, but I would like to get a will fine on this one for future parking, and I also need a little bit more time to complete dorm living issues.
Chair would entertain a motion finding respondents previously in non-compliance but currently in compliance as of January 28, 2011, and considering a will fine for any subsequent occurrences or violations up to $5,000 per occurrence.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion by Mr. Brown, second by Mr. Smart. Are there any questions or comments by members of the board? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, same sign. Case number 25 is CEB021124, Paul W. and Beatrice I. Zabitsky. Property is located at 840 North Halifax Avenue. We are determining compliance and non-compliance with junk vehicle and unlicensed wreck van.
Compliance, 128.
Case number 26 is CEB021125, Fred M. Hopster, 914 North Halifax Avenue. Compliance, non-compliance would be determination. Hazardous retainer wall falling.
Non-compliance, next cutoff, please.
Chair would entertain a motion finding respondent non-compliance and allowing the respondent until March 2nd, 2011 to come into compliance or be returned to the board for consideration of a fine at the $1,000 per day.
So.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Brown. Second by Ms. Kundick. Jump in there.
How about it? I'll pause next time.
Steve, forgive me, but did Fred Hopster die? I think he passed away.
Yes, this is actually, yes, he did. His daughter, I believe, and son-in-law are actually, oh, this is not addressed right, correct.
Well, who do we serve on this?
They have accepted the green card, and they, I'm not sure.
Do you remember
right now, Mr. Lee's?
Pardon?
Probably still is with the, yeah, I'm sorry.
It's
trust?
It's addressed to Fred M. Harpster, care of Susan Harpster McCoy, personal representative. Okay. On the tax form.
Okay.
Thank you.
Just wanted to know.
Yes.
Okay. Will we?
But again, at this time, the tax roll is showing Fred as the name listed in the tax roll. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, if we.
It's a Tim, and then it says
if it's something that's not remedy and we get to the point where we're considering fines, we may want to talk about changing this, but I don't know if it's necessary at this stage.
It does take care of.
It does.
Well,
care of. Yeah. Okay. Are there any additional questions or comments by members of the board? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, same sign. Case number 27 is CEB021126, Andrew and Kai's son, Miguel. Property is located at 2910 North Halifax Avenue. No occupational license. We are here to determine compliance or non-compliance.
Non-compliance, next cutoff.
Chair would entertain a motion finding respondent non-compliance and allowing the respondent until March 2, 2011 to come into compliance or be returned to the board for consideration of a one-time administrative fee of $250.
So moved.
I just don't want anybody to get tired.
I'll do a second. How's that?
Okay. Ms. Kundick has the motion. Mr. Borens has the second. Are there any questions or comments by members of the board? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed, same side?
Mr. Stevens.
Yes.
Just in case, just to clarify, all of these that I'm going on non-compliance next cutoff, I may have had communications, but they have not made the application.
Okay.
Just to let you know.
Okay. Case number 28, CEB021127, is in compliance as of January 28, 2011. Case number 29, CEB021128, John R. and Betty K. Horton. property is located at 350 Hartford Avenue. We're here to determine compliance and non-compliance. And Steve, I believe you state that it is in non-compliance.
Correct.
Chair will entertain a motion finding respondent in non-compliance and allowing the respondent until March 2nd, 2011 to come into compliance or be returned to the board for consideration of a fine up to $1,000 per day.
Oh, wait. Is that, I'm sorry.
29.
28?
29. 29.
Okay. Yeah, you're correct. I thought.
So move.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Smart, second by Mr. Borns. Are there any questions or comments by members of the board? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, same sign. Case number 30 has been disposed of. Case number 31 is CEB-021130, Karen Udolph Strobe. Property is located at 301 Riverview Boulevard. We're going to determine compliance and non-compliance for property landscaping and irrigation maintenance. Steve, non-compliance?
Non-compliance, next cutoff, please.
Chair would entertain a motion finding the respondent in non-compliance and allow the respondent until March 2nd, 2011 to come into compliance or be returned to the board for consideration of a fine up to $1,000 per day. Is there such a motion?
So moved. Second.
Motion by Mr. Brown. Mr. Harrington, will you do the second?
Yeah.
Second by Mr. Harrington. Are there any questions or comments by members of the board? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, same sign. Case number 32 is CEB-021131 Paul A. I believe that's Zokowski Revocable Trust. Property is located at 309 Seaview Avenue. No occupational license, compliance and non-compliance.
Non-compliance with application.
Jeez. Who's what?
They have applied. They just haven't completed the process.
Oh, okay.
Chair would entertain a motion found and respondent in non-compliance with the information that the inspector has provided. The respondent has applied but has not received the occupational license. And we would allow the respondent until March 2nd to come into compliance for return to the board for consideration of a one-time administrative fee of $250.
So move.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Smart. Second by Ms. Kundick. Are there any questions or comments by members of the board? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, same sign. Case number 33 is CEB-021132, Robert B. Hume and Robert W. Hume. Property is located at 712 North Wild Olive Avenue. Compliance or non-compliance be determination. Outside storage, old mildew peeling paint, trash and debris, damaged siding.
Non-compliance, next cutoff.
Chair would entertain a motion found and respondent non-compliance and allow the respondent until March 2nd, 2011 to come into compliance or be returned to the board for consideration of a $1,000 per day fine. Is there such a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Brown, second by Mr. Smart. Are there any questions or comments by members of the board? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, same sign. Case number 34 is CEB-021133, Robert B. Hume and Robert W. Hume, 712 North Wild Olive Avenue, Dawn Living. Is the violation compliance or non-compliance?
Compliance, 29.
Case number 35, CEB-021134, the Mather Group Incorporated is in compliance as of January 28, 2011. Any business or comments, questions by any member of the board?
A personal comment.
Yes.
Mr. Allman, what do you do in your spare time? I see all the ones you've got here.
Well, just like John and everybody else, we run around and do the best we can. This just happened to be my week or month, actually.
Bad boys, bad boys.
Oh.
Thanks, Mr. Brown. Once again, hopefully this one's a lot smoother.
Much better.
welcome, Ms. Kundick.
Thank you very much.
You had asked a question about the rental ordinance. I really didn't want to go too deep into it. Well, you didn't ask about the rental ordinance. You asked about this issue regarding the occupations
right.
And so forth. And it is a problematic thing, because the reality is that someone can just not get an OC license, and unless they don't have to allow us entry, so unless we and get in and see what the problems are. They can just do that every year anymore.
Correct.
And there's been some talk of a rental ordinance that may be able to pop and remedy that, and whether that, you know, where we always have from city. Guys in effect, I'm not sure, but okay. But the way it is now, yeah, you're right. It really is someone paying $250 every year, and you know, just get lost and forget you. But it also keeps us alerted to that person, and eventually, mm-hmm. you know, do something to get us in set.
I'm really bothered by that property that has no occupational license, and has, we show the picture.
Well,
rent.
Well, I'm not going to talk to any specific case. That's just probably not going to be proper for us to do that. But I just was saying in general. Mm-hmm. Because I think, I guess we still have an active case, so we'll hold on that. Oh, I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I don't think we probably ought to be talking about that. I mean, we can talk individually, but I don't think right now as a board, so she'll be discussing that since it's still pending. So that's all I had. I think you had an announcement regarding.
We just wanted to remind everybody about the code staff meeting and our code workshop. The code workshop is Tuesday the 22nd. It's 6:00 at night. You guys don't have to come. It's not a requirement. It's just for the general public to come, meet their code inspectors, and to find out the code process. We're going to do a brief PowerPoint, things like that. It's at the police department. It's probably going to be in the ComStat room, upstairs, second floor. And then the code stat is going to follow the ComStat meeting this month. So ComStat is the 24th, Thursday the 24th at 8 a.m., and then code stat will be after that. Probably maybe 10:30-ish.
Yeah, 10:30. Yeah. I don't know when we end the war.
Oh, so the 22nd is for the public?
Yes, it's for the general public.
Gotcha.
It's for the residents.
And then the 24th is the... Okay.
That's it. We just wanted to remind
you. Can I ask one general question? I live in Pelican Bay, where we have a lot of problems with dormitory living. Now, we've had a couple cases here where we said, okay, they're now in compliance. Do the code inspectors go back out and check periodically to make sure that they haven't fall out of compliance again?
Periodically, I would say that at this point, it's more on a complaint basis. Dorm living is difficult to prove. It's time-consuming, and we have a fairly heavy caseload as it is. But once we are in our areas and we know that these areas are kind of like problem issues, yes, as we cruise around, we keep an eye on it. Like Mr. Hume, I had to do an inspection. It was a storage building now. The other one that I wanted to get a will find on for parking is obviously, in my opinion, a dorm living. But I still have to take photos of cars and keep watching it.
Yeah, but specifically, we'll leave that alone. But one of the key things that you need to understand with dorm living is it's twofold. You have a dorm living, and then you have the residual. You have those effects, such as parking on the grass and those types of things. And that's more what generally draw on inspectors is those events or the homeowners associations.
I know there is a problem regarding the code with respect to non-related people, that I can have several non-related people stay with me for less than 30 days. So on day 39, they move out, and on day 32, they move back in, and now the clock starts ticking again on another 30 days.
No, we don't.
I know, we can't change that. I know we can't change that.
That's all we have.
Thank you, Tim.
I just had one question with regards to the property where the gentleman had, I guess, what does he need to get? So if you have a four-bedroom house, only two people can live there if you're renting it out? Is that what it is?
Non-related.
Two unrelated.
Right.
He could have a family. He could have a brother, sister.
And again, we're talking general. I don't know what
right.
specific.
Okay, yeah, in general, if you got a four-bedroom house, you can only have two non-related people mm-hmm. rent.
Right. Two mm-hmm. non-related. That means you may have a four-bedroom house that actually has a family
right.
with
right.
with okay. four-bedroom house, or a seven-bedroom house that have a family that would be appropriate for a seven-bedroom house. And if they want to lease or board someone, then they can have a person living there as a not supposed to be there as a tenant, but someone there that's a roommate or a friend, and as an additional person, as some people would have a roommate. That's what the ordinance provides.
Okay, but I just wanted to find out. So if you got a four-bedroom house and you wanted to rent out each room, you couldn't?
No.
That would actually be considered a boarding house.
Well,
gotcha.
Okay. Thanks.
That's my 309
mystery. Upon my manners, Ms. Cunning, but I did not welcome you to the board initially, and I'd like to do that now. So welcome. I hope you'll be around for a long time.
Thank you, Larry. My pleasure to serve with all of you.
It has been a pleasure for us today as well, and I look forward to working with you.
Thank you.
You're not usually over there by yourself.
It's okay.
Are there any other matters that any member of the board would like to discuss, or staff, city staff? We adjourn.